Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. I'm your election guru, Mark Braun here. Glad you could join us today. And I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Got it? Good. All right, so it is going to be presidential stuff this week, but first we're going to start off with the results of the New York City mayoral election, the primary. This is from a site called cityandstateny.com. And this is called, Here's What the November NYC Mayoral Election Could Look Like. Zoran Mamdani is all but assured to be the Democratic nominee for mayor. Unlike most years, that doesn't mean he's a shoo-in in the general. By Annie McDonough, June 25th, 2025. In most recent New York City elections, the winner of the Democratic primary is a shoo-in in November. That would make Assembly member Zoran Mamdani, who appears to have pulled off a stunning upset in Tuesday's Democratic mayoral primary, a sure thing for City Hall. But this year, for reasons that include an ex-governor desperate for a political resurrection and an indicted, but now no longer indicted, incumbent mayor, it's not that simple. Here's who the players and possible players are in November. Zoran Mamdani, Democratic nominee. The 33-year-old Democratic Socialist Assembly member pulled off a stunning upset over Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday as first-choice votes were counting, making him all but assured the Democratic nominee. While it's true that the New York general election electorate is more ideologically diverse than that of the Democratic primary electorate, the city has Republicans. The city is still largely Democratic. He is going to be the next mayor of New York City, Democratic strategist Tripp Yang predicted on election night. Curtis Sliwa, the Republican nominee. A mainstay in elections in city elections, Guardian Angels founder Curtis Sliwa will rally the city's growing Republican base. Even voter registration disadvantages aside, Sliwa faces a tough task with an unpopular Republican President Donald Trump in the White House. Mayor Eric Adams, Independent candidate. Mayor Eric Adams and his campaign are feeling pretty good after Mamdani's success on Tuesday night. Mamdani's far-left identity is exactly the foil Adams has been hoping for, whereas a Cuomo as Democratic nominee would have eaten into Adams' base. The phone's been ringing off the hook, said Adams' campaign spokesperson Todd Shapiro on Tuesday night, suggesting that Adams will pick up Cuomo's would-be supporters. The Adams campaign was already scheduled to hold a campaign kickoff on the City Hall steps on Thursday. Jim Walden, independent candidate. Lawyer Jim Walden will be more in the spotlight this summer as an independent candidate. His base of supporters remains to be determined, but he could pitch himself as a moderate, unscarred by scandals like Adams. Andrew Cuomo, a potential independent candidate. Despite securing an independent party line to run on as a fail-safe earlier this spring called Fight and Deliver, Cuomo didn't commit to actually running as an independent in November when he appeared on stage at his Election Watch party on Tuesday to announce he had called Mamdani to congratulate him on winning the Democratic primary. He said he would look at the numbers and continue to have conversations, notably less than a stated intent to run. This was Here's What the November NYC Mayoral Election Could Look Like by Annie McDonough from cityandstateny.com for June 25th, 2025. On to presidential stuff. We go to the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, May 22nd, 2025. Biden joins history of presidential health cover-ups by Mark Z. Baraback, columnist. Suddenly, it's 2024 all over again. Once more, we're litigating Joe Biden's catatonic debate performance, his lumbering gulp, his moth-eaten memory, and his selfish delusion he deserved a second term in the White House while shuffling through his ninth decade on Earth. Biden's abrupt announcement he faces an advanced form of prostate cancer has only served to increase speculation over what the president's inner circle knew and when they knew it. Original Sin, a book by journalists Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, published this week, is chock full of anecdotes illustrating the lengths to which Biden's family and palace guard worked to shield his mental and physical lapses from the voters. John Robert Green is not at all surprised. "It's old news, hiding presidential illness," said Green, who's written a shelf full of books on presidents and the presidency. "I can't think of too many who've been the picture of health." Before we go any further, let's state for the record, this is in no way condones the actions of Biden and his political enablers. To be clear, let's repeat it in the capital letters. What Biden and his handlers did was wrong. But as Green states, it was not unprecedented or terribly unusual. History abounds with examples of presidential maladies being minimized or kept secret. Grover Cleveland underwent surgery for oral cancer on a yacht in New York Harbor to keep his condition from being widely known. Woodrow Wilson suffered a debilitating stroke, a fact covered up by his wife and confidants, who exercised extraordinary power in his stead. Franklin D. Roosevelt and John F. Kennedy both suffered serious chronic ailments that were kept well away from the public eye. Those surrounding Ronald Reagan downplayed his injuries after a 1981 assassination attempt, and the Trump administration misled the public about the seriousness of the president's condition after he was diagnosed with COVID-19 a month before the 2020 election. The capacity to misdirect, in Biden's case, or mislead, as happened under Trump, illustrates one of the magical features of the White House: the ability of a president to conceal himself in plain sight. "When you're in the presidency, there's nothing you can't hide for a while," Green, an emeritus professor, history professor at Cazenovia College, said from his home in upstate New York. "You've got everything at your disposal to live a completely hidden double life if you want. Everything from the Secret Service to the bubble of the White House." Green likened the neoclassical mansion at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to a giant fishbowl, one that is painted from the inside. "It's highly visible, but you can't really see what's happening in the interior." That deflates the notion that there was some grand media conspiracy to prop Biden up. Sorry, haters. Yet detractors will say it was plain as the dawning day that Biden was demented, diminished, and obviously not up to the job of the presidency. Today, Trump's critics say the same sort of thing about him. From their armchairs, they even deliver quite specific diagnoses. He suffers dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease. That doesn't make it so. It's a very politicized process. People see what they want to see, said Jacob Apple, a professor of psychiatry and medical education at the Icahn School of Medicine in New York City, who's written a book on presidential health. "You can watch videotapes of Ronald Reagan in 1987, Apple said, and depending on your view of him, you could see him as sharp and funny as ever, or being on the cusp of dementia. 5 years after leaving the White House, Reagan, then 83, announced he was in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. To an uncomfortable degree, those covering the White House, and by extension the public they serve, are forced to rely on whatever the White House chooses to reveal. "I don't have subpoena power," Tapper told the Times' Stephen Battaglia, saying he would have eagerly published the details contained in his new book had sources been willing to come forth while Biden was still in power. "We were just lied to over and over again. It hasn't always been that way." In September 1955, during his first term, President Dwight D. Eisenhower suffered a heart attack while on a golf vacation in Denver. "It was sudden," said Jim Newton, an Eisenhower biographer. "One minute he's fine, and the next minute he was flat on his back, quite literally." The details surrounding Eisenhower's immediate treatment remains a mystery, though Newton suggests that may have had more to do with protecting his personal physician, who misdiagnosed the heart attack as a bout of indigestion, than a purposeful attempt to mislead the public. From then on, the White House was forthcoming, offering daily reports on what Eisenhower ate, his blood pressure, the results of various tests, to a point that it embarrassed the president. Among the information released was an accounting of Ike's bowel movements. "They were self-consciously transparent," Newton said. "The White House looked to the Wilson example as something not to emulate. Less than 14 months later, Eisenhower had sufficiently recovered, and voters had enough faith in his well-being that he won his second term in a landslide. But that 70-year-old example is a notable exception. As long as there are White House staffers, campaign advisors, political strategists, and family members, presidents will be surrounded by people with an incentive to downplay, minimize, or obfuscate any physical or mental maladies they face while in office. All we can do is wait years, decades for the truth to come out, and in the meantime, hope for the best. That was Biden Joins History of Presidential Health Cover-Ups by Mark Z. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, May 22nd, 2025. All right, there's this from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Saturday, May 24th, 2025. Trump may leave fewest papers of any president. His administration has used auto-deleting apps instead of saving communications for historical review. By Will Reissert, Washington. For generations, official American documents have been meticulously preserved and protected, from the era of quills and parchment to boxes of paper to the cloud, safeguarding snapshots of the government and the nation for posterity. Now the Trump administration has sought to expand the executive branch's power to shield from public view key administrative initiatives. Officials have used apps such as Signal that can auto-delete messages containing sensitive information rather than retaining them for record-keeping, and they have shaken up the National Archives leadership. To historians and archivists, it points to the possibility that President Trump will leave less for the nation's historical record than nearly any president before him. Such an eventuality creates a conundrum. How will experts, even ordinary Americans, piece together what occurred when those charged with setting aside the artifacts properly documenting history refused to do so? The Trump administration says it's the most transparent in history, citing the president's fondness for taking questions from reporters nearly every day. Trump does, however, often berate reporters who ask questions he doesn't like. In any case, flooding the airwaves, media outlets, and the internet with all things Trump isn't the same as keeping records that document the inner workings of an administration, historians caution. He thinks he controls history, said Timothy Naftali, a presidential historian who served as founding director of the Richard Nixon Presidential Library and Museum in Yorba Linda. He wants to control what Americans ultimately find out about the truth of his administration, and that's dangerous. Trump long refused to release his tax records despite every other major White House candidate and president having done so since Jimmy Carter. And today, White House stenographers still record every word Trump utters, but many of their transcripts are languishing in the White House press office without authorization for release, meaning there's no official record of what the president says for weeks, if at all. You want to have a record because that's how you ensure accountability, said Lindsay Chervinsky, executive director of the George Washington Presidential Library in Mount Vernon, Virginia. The Presidential Records Act of 1978 mandates the preservation forever of White House vice presidential documents and communications. It deems them the property of the U.S. government and directs the National Archives and Records Administration to administer them after a president's term. After his first term, rather than turn classified documents over to the National Archives, Trump hauled boxes of potentially sensitive documents to his Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago, where they ended up piled in his bedroom, a ballroom, and even a bathroom and shower. The FBI raided the property to recover them, and he was indicted on felony charges. The case was dismissed after he won the November election. Trudy Huskamp-Peterson, who served as acting archivist of the United States from 1993 to 1995, said keeping such records for the public is important because decision-making always involves conflicting views, and it's really important to get that internal documentation to see what the arguments were. President George H.W. Bush administration destroyed some informal notes, visitor logs, and emails. After President Clinton left office, his former National Security Advisor Sandy Berger pleaded guilty to taking copies of a document about terrorist threats from the National Archives. President George W. Bush's administration disabled automatic archiving for some official emails, encouraged some staffers to use private email accounts outside their work addresses, and lost 22 million emails that were supposed to have been archived, though they were eventually uncovered in 2009. Congress updated the Presidential Records Act in 2014 to encompass electronic messaging, including commercial email services known to be used by government employees to conduct official business. But back then, use of auto-delete apps was far less common. It's far easier to copy or forward a commercial email to a .gov address to be preserved than it is to screenshot a series of messages on an app like Signal, said Jason R. Barron, a professor at the University of Maryland and former director of litigation at the National Archives. There were efforts during the first Trump administration to safeguard transparency, including a memo issued through the office of White House counsel Don McCann in February 2017 that reminded White House personnel of the necessity to preserving and maintaining presidential records. The White House now points to having recently ordered the declassification of bevies of historical files, including records related to the assassination of Kennedy, his brother Robert, and Martin Luther King Jr. The Trump administration says it also ended a Biden policy that allowed staffers to use Microsoft Teams where chats weren't captured by White House systems. The Biden administration had over 800 users on Teams, meaning an unknown number of presidential records might have been lost, the Trump administration now says. But the White House did not answer questions about the possibility of drafting a new memo on record attention like McCann's from 2017. Chervinsky, author of The Cabinet, George Washington and the Creation of an American Institution, said Congress, the courts, and even the public often don't have the bandwidth to ensure records retention laws are enforced, meaning a lot of it is still, I think, an honor system. There aren't that many people who are practicing oversight, she said, so a lot of it does require people acting in good faith and using their operating systems that they're supposed to use and the filing systems they're supposed to use. Angered by the role the National Archives played in his documents case, meanwhile, Trump fired the ostensibly independent agency's head, archivist of the United States Colleen Shogan, and named Secretary of State Marco Rubio as her acting replacement. Peterson, the former acting National Archivist, said she still believes key information about the Trump administration will eventually emerge, but I don't know how soon. Ultimately, things come out, she said. That's just the way the world works. That was Trump may leave fewest papers of any president by Will Weissert, from the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Saturday, May 24th, 2025. Weissert writes for the Associated Press. And now here's something regarding a possible presidential candidate, or not, right here in California. From the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, June 22nd, 2025, Newsom as a presidential frontrunner? Not so fast, by Mark Z. Baraback, columnist. Today we discuss presidential politics, window treatments, and disasters of the natural and man-made variety. Time for Gavin Newsom to start measuring those White House drapes. Huh? You know, President of the United States. I'm thinking something earth-friendly like recycled hemp. Wait, what? Did you catch the nationally televised speech the governor recently gave? The one about democracy at a crossroads? I did. It was a fine speech, and the governor made some important points about President Trump's reckless commandeering of California's National Guard, his administration's indiscriminate immigration raids, and the wholly unnecessary dispatch of Marines to Los Angeles, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Venice Beach. Newsom was plenty justified in his anger and contempt. Trump, acting true to his flame-fanning fashion, turned what was a middling set of protests, nothing local law enforcement couldn't handle, into yet another assault on our sorely tested Constitution. Newsom's speech certainly met the moment, to use one of his favorite phrases. I'll grant you that. Unlike a lot of extracurricular activities aimed at boosting his presidential prospects, Newsom was addressing a Trump-manufactured crisis unfolding right here at home. It was a moment that called for gubernatorial leadership. So the kind of leadership, just the kind of leadership the Democrats need. So it's been said. It's not much of a leap to see Newsom leading the anti-Trump opposition to clear to the White House. Actually, that's a bigger leap than it takes to clear the Grand Canyon. Granted, Newsom's speech received a lot of raves from Democrats across the country. Many are desperate for someone in a position of power to give voice to their blood-boiling, cranium-exploding rage against Trump and his many excesses. Newsom did a good job channeling those emotions and articulating the dangers of an imprudent president run amok. But let's not go overboard. There is no lack of Democrats eager to take on Trump and become the face of the so-called resistance. There's no shortage of Democrats eyeing a 2028 bid for the White House. Those who run won't be schlepping all the political baggage that Newsom has to, such as rampant homelessness, an exploding budget deficit, vast income inequality, plus a lot of social policies that many Californians consider beneficent and broad-minded that, to put it mildly, others around the country consider much less so. Don't get me wrong, I love California with all my heart and soul. But we have a lot of deep-seated problems and cultural idiosyncrasies that Newsom's rivals, Democrat and Republican, would be only too happy to hang around his neck. So let's not get too caught up in the moment. The fundamentals of the 2028 presidential race haven't changed based on a single, albeit well-received, speech. It's still hard to see Democrats turning the party's fate over to yet another nominee spawned in the liberal stew of San Francisco politics and campaigning with kooky California as the home address. Stranger things have happened. True. That said, 2028 is a zillion political light years away and countless news cycles away. First come the midterm elections in November 2026, giving voters the chance to weigh in on Trump and his actions. The verdict will go a long way towards shaping the dynamic in 2028. Well, at least Newsom has brought his A-game to social media. His trolling of Trump is something to behold. Whatever. You're not impressed? I think it's best to leave the snark to the professionals. I do, however, have some sympathy for the governor. It's not easy dealing with someone as spiteful and immoral as the nation's axe grinder in chief. Consider, for instance, the disaster relief money that fire-devastated Southern California is counting on. Helping the region in its time of desperate need shouldn't be remotely political or part of some red versus blue state feud. Historically, that sort of federal aid has never been. But this is Trump we're dealing with. To his credit, Newsom tried making nice in the days and weeks after the January firestorm. He ignored the president's provocations and held what was later described as an amicable session with Trump in the Oval Office. Their working relationship seemed to be a good one. But few things last with the transactional Trump, save for his pettiness and self-absorption. Asked last week if his recent dust-ups with Newsom would affect his granting of wildfire relief, Trump said, "Yeah, maybe." He called Newsom incompetent, trotted out more gobbledygook about raking forests, and then soliloquized on the nature of personal relationships. When you don't like somebody, don't respect somebody, it's hard for that person to get money if you're on top, Trump said. Yeesh. Responding in a post on X, Newsom correctly noted, sucking up to the president should not be a requirement for him to do the right thing for the American people. Hard to argue with that. Yet here we are. The nation's second most populous city is occupied by National Guard and Marine troops. Thousands of people displaced by disaster, their past lives gone up in smoke, are hostage to the whims of a peevish president who always puts his feelings first and cares nothing for the greater good. The midterm election cannot come soon enough. That was Newsom as a Presidential Front Runner, Not So Fast, by Mark C. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, June 22nd, 2025. All right, now here's something from FoxNews.com, and this is called 21 Democrats Who May Try to Succeed Trump in the 2028 Presidential Election. Here's an early peek at the Democrats who may make a run for the White House in 2028 by Paul Steinhauser, Fox News, published May 29, 2025. It has been just over 4 months since President Donald Trump returned to power in the White House, and the very early moves in the 2028 presidential race are already underway by some Democrats with likely national ambitions. This upcoming weekend, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who was the Democrats' 2024 vice presidential nominee, and Maryland Governor Wes Moore, who says he is not laying the groundwork for a 2028 presidential run, will make separate appearances in South Carolina, the state the Democratic National Committee anointed to hold the leadoff primary in their 2024 nominating calendar. 2 weeks later, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, who ran for the White House in 2020, will headline a major Democratic State Party dinner in New Hampshire, which for a century has held the first presidential primary. 2 weeks ago, 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg, who later served as Transportation Secretary in former President Joe Biden's administration, headlined a town hall with veterans and military families in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Iowa's caucuses for a half a century kicked off both major political parties' presidential nominating calendars until the DNC demoted the Hawkeye state on their 2024 schedule. Another potential contender, two-term Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, late last month gave the keynote address at a major state party fundraising gala in New Hampshire. Also making noise is two-term Democratic Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who said recently he would consider running for president if he felt he could successfully unite the country. Additionally, progressive firebrand Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York grabbed plenty of attention in the past couple of months, co-headlining a slew of large rallies across the country with longtime progressive champion Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, which sparked plenty of 2028 speculation. The Democratic Party has been in the political wilderness since last November's election setbacks, when Republicans won back control of the White House and the Senate and defended their fragile House majority. Republicans additionally made gains among Black and Hispanic voters, as well as younger voters, all traditional members of the Democratic Party base. Since Trump's return to power, an increasingly angry and energized base of Democrats has been pushing for party leaders to take a stronger stand in pushing back against the president's sweeping and controversial agenda during the open months of his administration, his second administration. Democrats are not only looking ahead to next year's midterms, when they hope to make ballot box gains, but also to the next presidential race. There was a sense of hopelessness earlier this year among Democrats as Trump came in with his wrecking ball, and it seemed like there was nothing but futile opposition to him, longtime Democratic strategist Chris Moyer told Fox News. So thinking about a presidential race with potential candidates is a way to get some hope back and look towards a future that doesn't include Trump. Moyer, a veteran of a handful of Democratic presidential campaigns, said the race is wide open and it won't be long before we see clear maneuvering from a litany of candidates. The results of the 2026 midterm elections will have a major impact on the shape of the next White House race. For now, however, here are 20 Democrats considered the potential presidential contenders to watch on the road to 2028. Kamala Harris. After lying low when the Biden administration came to a close, former Vice President Kamala Harris has picked up the pace of late, including headlining a recent major DNC fundraiser in New York City with another in San Francisco next week. Among her campaign options that she's weighing is a 2026 run for the open governor's seat in her home state of California and another bid in 2028 for the White House. A source in the former vice president's political orbit confirmed to Fox News Digital 2 months ago that Harris has told allies she would decide by the end of the summer whether to launch a 2026 gubernatorial campaign. Harris served as San Francisco District Attorney, California Attorney General, and represented the Golden State in the U.S. Senate before joining Biden's 2020 ticket and winning that election as vice president. Additionally, Harris would be considered the clear frontrunner for governor in the heavily blue California in the race to succeed term-limited Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom. However, early polling in the 2028 Democratic nomination race indicates that Harris would be the front-runner, thanks in part to her name recognition within her party. While there are plenty of voices within the party who would like to move on from the Biden-Harris era following Trump's sweeping victory, and there is little history of Democrats yearning for past defeated presidential nominees, Trump has rewritten the rules when it comes to defeated White House contenders making another run. Potential buyer's remorse of a second Trump administration could boost the 60-year-old Harris in the years to come. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. The progressive rock star, best known lawmaker among the so-called squad of diverse House Democrats in October, turned 35, the minimum age to run for president. Some Democrats argue that a riveting messenger with star power is needed as the party's next nominee, and Ocasio-Cortez is guaranteed to grab plenty of attention if she ultimately decides to run. There's also speculation the four-term federal lawmaker from New York City may primary challenge Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York when he's up for re-election in 2028. Governor Gavin Newsom of California. California Governor Gavin Newsom was a top surrogate for Biden during the president's re-election bid. With the blessing of the White House, the two-term California governor debated then-Republican presidential candidate and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis last year on Fox News. Newsom's travels on behalf of Biden brought him to New Hampshire and South Carolina, two crucial early voting states of the Democrats on the Democratic Party's nominating calendar. After Harris, his friend and fellow Californian, replaced Biden atop the Democrats' 2024 ticket, the governor, after a pause, continued his efforts to keep Trump from returning to the White House. While Newsom and California's Democrat-dominated legislature took action to Trump-proof the Golden State, the governor has also worked with Trump on key matters, including January's wildfires that devastated parts of metropolitan Los Angeles. Newsom also appears to have moderated on some issues and invited well-known Trump allies Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon on his weekly podcast. The 57-year-old Newsom, who is term limited, completes his duties in Sacramento at the end of next year, right around the time the 2028 presidential election will start to heat up. Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is becoming a leading voice in the Democrats' opposition to Trump and has taken steps to Trump-proof his solidly blue state. "You come from my people, you come through me," Pritzker told reporters of his efforts to protect Illinois. Pritzker was also a high-profile surrogate on behalf of Biden and then Harris during the 2024 cycle. Those efforts brought Pritzker to Nevada, a general election battleground state, and an early voting Democratic presidential primary, and New Hampshire. Additionally, the governor's recent trip to New Hampshire sparked more 2028 buzz. However, before he makes any decision about 2028, the 60-year-old governor must decide whether he will run in 2026 for a third term steering Illinois. Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer grabbed plenty of attention and became a Democratic Party rising star in 2020 when she feuded with Trump over COVID-19 federal assistance and survived a foiled kidnapped attempt. Trump at the time called her "that woman from Michigan." Along with Newsom and Pritzker, Whitmer's name was floated as a possible replacement for Biden following his disastrous debate performance against Trump in late June before the president endorsed Harris and the party instantly coalesced around the vice president. Whitmer was a leading surrogate for Biden and then for Harris and made a big impression on Democratic activists during a stop this summer in New Hampshire on behalf of Harris. However, Whitmer was criticized by some in her party for appearing to cozy up to Trump during a White House visit earlier this spring. The 53-year-old governor is term limited and will leave office at the end of next year. Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. Governor Josh Shapiro, the 51-year-old first-term governor of Pennsylvania, was in Harris's shortlist for vice presidential nominee. Even though the vice president named Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate, Shapiro remained a top surrogate on behalf of his party's 2024 national ticket. However, his two-day swing in New Hampshire during the final week ahead of Election Day did raise some eyebrows in 2028 speculation. After Harris lost battleground Pennsylvania to Trump, there was plenty of talk within the party that Harris had made the wrong choice for her running mate. Shapiro, who has a track record of taking on the first Trump administration as a Pennsylvania Attorney General, is expected to play a similar role with Trump back in the White House. The governor will be up for re-election in 2026. Governor Wes Moore of Maryland. Maryland Governor Wes Moore is considered by many to be another Democratic rising star. The 46-year-old Army veteran, who was also a Rhodes Scholar and CEO of the charitable organization The Robin Hood Foundation during the coronavirus pandemic, was elected 2 years ago. Even though Moore said in a recent interview on The View that he's not running in 2028. Speculation persists, fueled in part because of his upcoming stop in South Carolina. Moore will be up for re-election in 2026. Pete Buttigieg. Former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who surpassed expectations during his 2020 Democratic presidential nomination run, was a very active surrogate on behalf of Biden and later Harris during the 2024 cycle. He helped raise a lot of money for the Democratic Party, including heading a top-dollar fundraiser in New Hampshire. The 43-year-old former South Bend, Indiana mayor and former naval officer who served in the war in Afghanistan is considered one of the party's biggest and brightest stars. He was known as a top communicator for the administration, including making frequent appearances on Fox News. Fueling buzz about a potential 2028 presidential run, Buttigieg passed on a 2026 Senate bid in his adopted home state of Michigan and made a high-profile stop in Iowa earlier this month. Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, 47, who was elected governor in 2019 and then re-elected in 2023 in Red State, Kentucky, was in Harris's longer list for potential running mates. Beshear made plenty of new friends and contacts as he ventured to New Hampshire last year to headline the state Democratic Party's annual fall fundraising gala. He served as Kentucky's attorney general before running for governor. Beshear said in a recent interview with local station WDRB that if you'd asked me a couple of years ago if this is something I'd consider, I probably wouldn't have. But I don't want to leave a broken country to my kids. And so if I'm somebody that can bring this nation together, hopefully I'll find some common ground. It's something I'll consider. Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia. Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock, 55, is a major player in Washington as the Democratic minority in the Senate fights back against the second Trump administration. Warnock, who won Senate elections in 2020 and 22 in battleground Georgia, served as senior pastor at the famed Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where Martin Luther King once preached. He's up for re-election in 2028. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, who ran for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination, is considered one of the party's most talented orators. Thanks to his 2020 run, Booker made plenty of friends and allies in such early states as New Hampshire and South Carolina. Booker made headlines earlier this year by delivering a record-breaking 25-hour and 5-minute marathon speech from the floor of the Senate. The speech protested the sweeping and controversial moves so far by Trump during his second administration, as well as the operations of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. The 56-year-old senator is up for re-election in 2026. Senator Christopher Murray of Connecticut. Since the November election, Senator Christopher Murray of Connecticut has been very vocal about the steps Democrats need to take to win back working-class voters. First elected to the House in 2006 and later to the Senate in 2012, the 51-year-old Murphy cruised to re-election this year by nearly 20 points, which means he would not have to decide between a re-election bid and a White House run in 2028. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar, 65, who once served as county attorney of Minnesota's most populous county, is now in her fourth term as Senate. Klobuchar ran for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination and came in a strong third in New Hampshire's first-in-the-nation primary. The senator has not ruled out making another run for the White House in 2028. Representative Ro Khanna of California. Representative Ro Khanna, 48, was a tireless surrogate on behalf of Biden and then Harris. He has been a regular visitor to New Hampshire in the past couple of years, including a high-profile debate last year against then-presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. Khanna has grabbed plenty of attention so far this year, as he has held town halls in Republican-controlled congressional districts and targeted Vice President J.D. Vance with events in the Vice President's home state of Ohio and Yale Law School, where both politicians earned their degrees. Stephen A. Smith. The 57-year-old sports TV personality, sports radio host, sports journalist, and actor has generated a ton of buzz this year as he has mulled a White House run and has even grabbed Trump's attention. Mark Cuban. Another potential contender with plenty of star power is Mark Cuban. The 66-year-old billionaire, business mogul, and part owner of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks was a high-profile surrogate for Harris during her presidential election campaign. we're coming to a close, so I'll just tell you that we've got Roy Cooper of North Carolina, Governor, Governor Michelle Luan Grisham of New Mexico, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and Gina Raimondo, a former Rhode Island governor. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun. Happy voting and peace.